July 3rd, 2019. The news is going to be weird this week because tomorrow is the July 4th holiday and everybody's going to be checked out on Friday. I mean, and then next week's news is going to be super weird because there's a lot happening on Sunday. Anyway.
Got to celebrate the birth of my nation.
Oh. Didn't have a microphone. It's a good thing we figured that out without having to restart.
It's fine.
Because that happens more often than not because I have to move it to fix the stories. Anyway, you don't care about any of that, and I don't blame you for it. But what you should care deeply about is the right to repair. The right to repair has enemies, bitter enemies. We can count among those high profiles such as Apple, John Deere, most of the car companies, Tesla. Tesla is a big one. People don't think about Tesla. Another one you might not think about?
Microsoft? What? What? Microsoft has told the FTC that repair poses a cyber risk. Unfortunately, the article author here says it doesn't.
I agree.
The author here knows that some people aren't going to bother reading their article, so they're just like, you know, is it a risk? The answer is no. The answer to any headline question is always no.
So this is all about the TPM, and Microsoft is making a weird argument that somehow allowing you to repair that is going to invalidate it or let you tap into its secrets and destroy the industry. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but it's not genuine.
There's no reason. Like, so on the Surface Pro 3, for example, the SSD is modular, and they could have put in a door behind the kickstand, but they didn't. And you could totally change the SSD behind the kickstand. The reason they didn't do that is because they could get a higher profit margin by not allowing you to change the SSD later.
How dare you insinuate that? They also pointed out that the technology behind that, the cryptographic keys and everything, is not unique to Microsoft. Other companies also have access to that. So it's not exactly a trade secret. It's just another bad argument for anti-repair.
You should not be able to repair things that you own. What are you, pleb?
This is the company that, when it found out that people had gotten into the Xbox 360, began to just cover everything in epoxy. For your own safety, of course. So, there's rumors going around that can't be validated that AMD might have something very impressive coming up on the precipice.
We wouldn't know.
So, what evidence do we have of this? You know, AMD themselves, they can't say. No one can say exactly what it is, but perhaps a clue.
According to TechSpot, Intel is going to cut their desktop CPU prices by 10 to 15% as Ryzen 3000 draws near. They went so far as to leak an internal memo that was like, wow, AMD actually seems to have a competitive product, but rest assured, we're still going to win on single-thread and multi-thread performance, according to that memo from Intel. But Intel won't confirm this. So, like, a lot of press have reached out to Intel to be like, hey, what's going on with this? And the only response that I've heard of from other, because I asked some people that know, because we don't know. And one guy was like, all I heard was screeching on the other end of the phone and then a click.
They're going to do it. They don't have a choice. Which, as everybody knows, is good for the consumer.
Those shareholder calls are going to be real great because the shareholder calls up till now have been, everything is fine. Nothing is on fire. This is all according to plan.
I don't think the last few have been that great. There was a point this week where all the voices of the hipsters cried out at once and were silenced because one of their heroes, the god of the design that they all follow, has departed.
Johnny Ive, you can only be talking about Johnny Ive. Even Bloomberg is talking about this. Apple design chief Johnny Ive is leaving to form an independent company. So Love From, which I read as Love Form the first 50
it's
or 60 times
stupid,
I saw it.
Stupid name. Now, here's the good news. if you're weeping uncontrollably because of that news and you think that the iconic design will no longer be in your Apple products, he's creating Love From, and Love From is going to do business with Apple.
Apple's going to be their biggest customer.
It's still
Tim Cook.
His designs will still be there. Yeah. They'll probably cost a little bit more, and that cost will definitely be passed on to you, but you'll still have the classic design that you're used to.
How high can those prices go? I mean, we're already like an order of magnitude or more above where I thought that consumers would tolerate, and yet.
Now, does he just do UI, or did he do actual?
No, he did like the hardware design, like, you know, the unibody.
So do you think he was behind the stand?
Oh, that's a good question. You think the stand was the thing that...
It was like, wow, look, these idiots are willing to pay for anything. I'm going to splinter off because I got to step this up. I got to make hay while the sun shines. Well, you know, the news is probably good for AMD. Who can say for sure? But a lot of signs, you know, you shake that eight ball, you get that all signs point to yes. And but not all the news is good, because the Wall Street Journal, which in the past has had a bit of a spotty record when it comes to detailed tech reporting, they came out with a story that was a little bit critical, and AMD has responded.
So AMD blasts the Wall Street Journal over factual errors and omissions. This is talking about the sharing of technology with a joint venture in China. But they got a lot of things wrong. I mean, I don't know anything about doing business in China. And even I know that if you want to have a big company in China, it has to be a joint venture with local Chinese ownership. That's just how it is in China. Like, if you have a company that is not a Chinese company operating in China, all of your stuff is going to be stolen and it's going to be terrible. But the Wall Street Journal did this article. It was almost like a hit piece. It was like, oh my gosh, AMD's giving away their revolutionary Zen design to China and blah, blah, blah. But that wasn't it at all. TSMC manufactures it. Even TSMC doesn't have all the intellectual property secrets. And in rare form, it's unusual for AMD to issue this kind of a response. And the rebuttal is very succinct is not even the right word, but maybe pointed. It's just like, no, this is wrong. This is wrong. If this doesn't work like this, this is wrong.
They also point out that this is not cutting-edge technology that we're talking about here.
Well,
it's older stuff.
It's the original Zen core, which is now two generations behind as of the 7th. And even if China were somehow able to reverse engineer that, the reverse engineering is going to take another year or two. And by then, that intellectual property is long since obsolete. I mean, the Zen core is not even the fastest silicon you can get.
You could always sell it to Huawei.
Huawei's working on their own silicon.
Well, I mean, they're not going to be able to buy it from the U.S., although maybe they can now. Who knows? But it's nice to have that in your pocket. Why not? Intel, as we have just discovered, might be in a little bit of hot water. They might be looking to raise a little cash and put that towards some future investments. So it's good news if you're... Let's say you're a fledgling company and you're looking to get into the mobile world. Maybe you want to attend this auction.
Intel is launching a blockbuster auction for its mobile portfolio. You know, I was talking to some people at Computex about this, and I was like, I think Intel's going to probably have to sell their mobile stuff because of the whole 5G debacle. And it seems like that. I wouldn't have thought that they would do it as an auction. I figured they would probably line everything up behind closed doors, but if it's an auction, they must want to get rid of it, like, now.
Yeah, right around the 7th. The Galaxy Fold had a tenuous birth, and it did not go well when it got into the hands of the testers.
Remind me again when that was supposed to launch. It was April,
April,
right?
Yes. We are now in July. So they have had time to look at it and retest it, or perhaps test it for the first time. And they have now made the decision. It's ready.
Samsung Galaxy Fold is now ready for launch, according to the investor. Although this is from South Korea, the South Korea Investor Times. So they're hoping to roll this out in July. And the investor people, I guess, reached out to Samsung and said, hey, so this is going to roll out before the new Note. And Samsung got weird and aggressive and was like, no, this is just like, we're rolling out the new Fold. It's fine. We don't want to talk about the Note. Like, okay.
Be interesting to see. I mean, that's those seem like some serious issues to fix in that short amount of time. Maybe they did it. Maybe they didn't.
Maybe they just put glue in there so that dirt wouldn't get in the screen.
Seems like that would mess with the folding a little bit. Maybe reduce the number of folds. July is an exciting time, not only because of the birth of our country and cookouts and vacations, but because generally we have the Steam Summer Sale during this month, and everybody looks forward to it. Remember when the Steam Summer Sale was really amazing and they lowered the prices a lot? Well, these days they don't lower the prices quite as much. Maybe it just seems like that. I don't know. But they do some gimmicky bullshit stuff with collecting cards and games and whatever, and I usually, like, I'll click on it, and it's so convoluted, and I'm just like, I don't have time for this. And, in fact, this year, it is especially convoluted.
So, indie developers suggest the Steam Summer Sale confusion is hurting their games. And there's an updated in brackets there, which is a quote from Valve. What was happening here was that if you have a bunch of games on your wish list, there was a chance that Valve would give you one of those games on your wish list, or give you points to help you buy it, or whatever. And so people were removing cheap indie games or pre-release indie games from their wish list. And even though it's an indie game that's not necessarily out yet, you could still buy it sometimes because it'll go on sale finally in like pre-release or alpha or whatever. Or just people seeing that there's a lot of interest in a game will drive its metrics up for search and this kind of thing. So a lot of indie developers have said, oh no, this means that a lot of people think that they were going to get that cheap game or an indie game as part of this Grand Prix thing, but Steam has clarified and said, no, it's on each individual's wish list. So, like, if I put a AAA game at the top of my wish list and I happen to be selected, then that's the one that I'm more likely to get, not the indie game. So there's no point in removing indie games or cheap indie games from your wish list. But it seems like Steam was trying to gamify the whole review wish list thing and just did it very badly.
Yeah. Well, I think they wanted you to put more things on your wish list, and yet they didn't think it through, because if it wasn't clear, I would think the same thing. I would think, okay, my odds of getting more than one game are near zero, right? It's rare that you're going to get one. So I'm going to put one game on my wish list. So if I win, they can't give me some garbage game. I want the most expensive game. And that's the only one. That wasn't the only issue. Of course, looking at this graphic here, you could choose whatever team you wanted to be on, right? And they are all animals. It's rabbit, turtle, pig, I don't know what that thing is, and corgi. Now, this being the internet, and people being sadly predictable and pathetic, literally everyone chose corgi. So they decide who wins based on the team. So everybody joins the winning team. I mean, who thought this? Did they whiteboard this?
I think that Gabe is probably checked out at this point. He's probably just in his money bin, swimming all day. He's just like, whatever, guys.
So they've apparently done some stuff to deal with that as well. But yeah, I mean, you can obviously see from the graphic, Team Corgi has a lot more people than any other team. And the way that you win has to do with playing games and assigning those points to your team. So if you have a lot more people, you win. Oh, I cannot tell.
The quote from Valve was literally, yeah, we could have done this better.
Can you tell which tab is active? Because I can't. I think it's this one, right?
Nope. One more. Two more.
Oh, okay. I got you. Gotcha. Little bit of hardware news.
Hardware. This one, I'm really excited by this. Although, I can't pre-order it anywhere. I might be able to pick this up on Micro Center. It turns out I'm going to Micro Center on Sunday the 7th.
And this is, if you haven't already guessed what it is based on that, it's the new Pi. Not a Jeep Pi.
It's the Raspberry Pi 4 on sale now from $35. Although there are more expensive models that are available with up to 4 gigabytes of memory.
I think that one's 50 or 55. They've got the, 55 for the 4 gigabyte model. They also have
dual HDMI.
Yeah, this is cool. We've got the dual HDMI. You can buy the various cables and stuff, everything is $5. The case is $5. Cables are $5. That's actually $3. What a steal. Conversion.
USB-C power delivery.
Anything finally. You need. You want a book. They've got it. So that's pretty cool. They have
dual monitors on a Raspberry Pi. How crazy is that?
Beefed up everything. Not just the processor, but obviously the video has to be better. Dual 4K from a Raspberry Pi. Imagine it. Imagine a world, ladies and gentlemen. $35. So, yeah. Comes pre-installed with the OS, too. Do you get an SD card, I guess?
No, not usually. There's like kits they sell that come with a whole bunch of things.
Well, they were talking about it. It comes with the OS, so that must be another option. They don't price that here.
Yeah, no, you just get the bare board. I mean, the HDMI cable alone is going to be like another $15 because it's that weird micro HDMI nonsense.
Now, not to be left behind, another amazing project that everybody's going to want to be a part of.
Introducing the Commodore 64. You know, so it's a full-size Commodore 64. You can do retro computing on. It comes with a bunch of cool stuff. Yes, if you're in, like, the Commodore 64, you remember just check it out. It does have modern monitor connections, at least, which is good.
That's important.
Yeah, a little bit. But here's the thing. Do you think it's going to sell more than the PS1 Mini? Because I think it will. I think Sony screwed up the PS1 so bad that... This will probably sell more.
It's a question of... So, the Commodore 64 had cartridge games, which was an interesting thing about it. So, is it including that? Can you run ROMs on it?
I think you probably can run ROMs, but not officially, like not in any kind of sanctioned way. But there's some stuff that it comes with.
Yeah, so it's going to be a matter of... this website's a little light.
A lot on detail.
Retrogames.biz. Let's find out more. Yeah. 720p, 60 hertz. Nice. Joystick comes with it. 64 pre-installed games. Okay. Yeah.
That's not a list of 64 games, though.
So that's better than the one you're talking about, the PS1.
Yeah. That's my point. It's like, this is better executed than the PS1.
Load and save your own files and games via USB. And program in C64.
Or the MiG-20.
Yeah, so coming in December. Yeah, I remember we had a Commodore, and it was frustrating. Because you would try to type in those shitty games or load them from tape.
Yeah, the load from tape thing was because everybody always had like the tapes that had been taped over like 5 times, and then there were just all these errors.
Yeah, some garbage characters would get in there, and it didn't work. And as a young man, I didn't quite understand what was happening there, but I was
Is this garbage character supposed to be here, or is this a bad read?
We had some cartridges. We had
I never had any cartridges.
Lunar Lander, Radar Rat Race, Seawolf. We had Seawolf. Good times.
I think I might have gotten to play one of those, maybe.
If you are an owner of a MacBook, specifically a mid-2015 MacBook, the news is bad.
Turns out there's a battery recall. It's not nothing to do with the keyboard, but you'd think they would recall the keyboard by now. But now there have been 26 incidents, according to Apple, and that's bad. So they want to talk to everybody about their battery.
Well, specifically, they want you to send it back so they can replace it. There's no talking. Time of talking is over. They want to get that out of your hands before it burns someone and it costs them a lot of money. Because they're already losing money because Johnny Ive started his own business. He's charging them so much by the hour. I've got a little bit of Bitcoin, and when it hit 13.8 or whatever, someone messaged me and was like, oh my God, have you seen this? And I was like, I know I should sell this. Every logical synapse in my brain is telling me, sell it, you moron. It's going to go back to 10, or, you know, it's going to fall. You're going to make money if you sell it right now. And I was like, no, I can't do it. I believe. And what happens?
During 10 minutes, it plunged $1,800.
Could have been $1,800 in my pocket.
Silicon Valley is saying, oh my gosh, plunge those Bitcoin's volatility. I'm always paranoid to do that, though, because then it's like, do I owe taxes on that? Because I converted it to cash and then back again.
Yeah. It's capital gains on the profit.
Yeah.
But I bought in at like $2,000. So, yeah, there would be sizable taxes there. And then if you buy back in, you could net lose money this year.
Yeah.
But, that's just the game.
Don't hate the player, hate the game. Is that what you're with Bitcoin?
Sure. Grubhub. Ever used it? I've not used it yet. Nobody delivers out to me.
No, I don't. I have not used Grubhub.
Well, Grubhub, if you don't know, they deliver food to you on a kind of like an Uber style situation. And if you're a restaurant, you have to sign up with them and give them a commission because they're dealing with all the delivery and that's going to help your business, right?
And use their app and that kind of thing.
But that's not all they demand from you.
Grubhub is buying up thousands of restaurant web addresses. That means mom and pop can't own their slice of the internet. So this sounds a little bit doom and gloom, but they really do their homework for this app. They found some people that run a restaurant that are paying Grubhub over $5,000 a month for leads.
It was eight.
Seven and then eight, but then Grubhub charges you optimistically based on calls it generates from its app, and then if that doesn't result in a sale, you have to tell them, oh, that didn't result in a sale. Otherwise, they charge you a commission like as if it resulted in a sale.
So here's an example. This is a real website for moshers, and this is Grubhub's automatically generated moshers website, where they just bought up a domain that seemed like the other one. And then you've got, here's one, Happy Kitchen. Again, this is Grubhub's pirate site. Now, this is not illegal. Molly Hatchet Sub Shop is a great name. What's Molly Hatchet? That's a band. So I don't think it's illegal what they're doing. Certainly immoral. But they claim that they're doing this to help your business. However, like you talk about the phone calls, all the links and all of the phone numbers and everything on these pop-up sites that Grubhub is creating are those commission generating.
And they charge more than the restaurant does.
So,
which is a problem. Well, is it a problem? I don't know.
So yeah, and if you try to leave, like this woman figured out she was paying them $8,000 or $7,000 or whatever it was. She wanted to leave, but now she didn't have a website. So she started looking for domains. Well, guess what? Grubhub owns them all.
All the versions.
So what are you going to do?
Restaurant name.
Bad news. She also talked about how even though Grubhub did generate more or the same amount of business, she was losing money on all those fees and everything.
Yeah, because they've really ratcheted things up. And she said that there were other services like Grubhub that were just flat fee. And so those businesses were competitive for the kinds of things that she was looking for, at least. So if that's true, why is one commission-based and the other one flat fee?
Because you get all this added value, like them stealing your domain. That's not free. People don't do that for free. Spotify. So a lot of us have unlimited streaming plans, and you don't really think about it, but every time you click on one of those songs, someone's getting paid. It's a small amount, but it's
fractions of a penny.
It's happening, and it adds up. And it adds up that so much that it turns out to be the lion's share of what it costs to run something like Spotify. And they have these weird rules, like if you're a student, you count as half a person. Family plan counts as 1.5 people, which families are usually at least two people, right?
Yeah.
That's a weird calculation. Anyway, all those different calculations and, you know, laws and stuff, it's hard to calculate. And sometimes they calculate wrong.
Spotify wants a refund on overpaid royalties to U.S. songwriters, the report says. It's even a little more subtle than that. The royalty rate was set by some kind of society or something. And, like, they, according to the article, they set the rate, like that society, but then that was not the final rate.
Was appealed.
Yeah. And so Spotify paid the higher rate just so that they wouldn't be in anyone's bad graces. And so for 1 year, the guild or whatever said that your overpayment can be credited toward your next year's royalty payments, but Spotify wants to go back 2 or 3 years.
But I wonder how long does it take for all that to filter down to the actual artist. Because if you're clawing back...
Never. It never makes it to the actual artist.
Well, I guess that would make it simplify. But if you're clawing back, I mean, do you call up Taylor Swift and it's like, look, Taylor, you got to write us a check. Or it pays you too much.
It's more like, Taylor, your check this year is going to be real small because we've overpaid you for the last 3 years.
Yeah, I think her check's probably okay.
Most everyone else's will not be.
She's doing all right. She probably won't starve, is what I'm saying. Now, this next story... We get a lot of flack in the comments because people will say, I can't believe that you're using Website X as a source. Don't you know that they're fake news? Don't you guys know better than to believe this, you know, mass media garbage? And the answer is, sure, we know enough to be skeptical, you know, from time to time, but especially with the zeitgeist of YouTube right now, using these mainstream sources gives it a legitimacy, and you expect them to be at least part of the truth from which you can kind of talk about from there, right? So, I mean, if we just had Prison Planet up here all the time, we'd be banned and demonetized, and no one would believe us, you know? And maybe they get something right once in a while, and maybe, you know, Breitbart and all these fringe things. We've used Slate. Slate is absolutely just Washington Post. We use the Washington Post from time to time, but it's like, you know, get everybody's viewpoint and then talk about it. You know, we're not trying to ignore one place or the other. So all that to say, this was a huge story. No one touched it. No one. The Verge, this was the only mainstream article I could find about it. And this is just one that says it's bullshit.
Yes. So Project Veritas YouTube sting was deeply misleading and successful. Their subheadline is, James O'Keefe's stunt playbook keeps giving conservative lawmakers ammunition, even if the evidence is all phony. So this is a really interesting take on that situation, but actually watching the videos...
Interesting.
Actually watching the videos tells quite a different story.
So if you don't know what it is, I would highly encourage you to watch it.
What a mess.
His big thing is hidden camera, right? He gets somebody, some young idealist goes in and talks to these various, it's almost always left wing because, you know, they're trying to root out this anti-conservative bias. They talk to some higher up in one of these big tech companies. They did Wall Street Journal, and then this has been Google. They did Twitter. They've done a lot of the big ones. Pinterest. They just did the thing with Pinterest. And they get them to admit that there are all these plans or protocols in place
to nudge things.
Yeah, for controlling speech, essentially. So he got a very high-ranking Google employee to admit that, yes, there is AI that is designed to bias the platform toward whatever they feel like. And she referred to, the Trump situation. Like, yes, we have to stop the Trump situation in 2020, whatever that might mean. Now, YouTube took the video down, obviously, right? But it actually, there is a Google policy that's like a privacy policy. It was clear this woman did not want to be recorded. She did not want to be on YouTube. And she was secretly recorded and put on YouTube. So yes, you could take it down based on that. Not to silence it because Google owns you. But this Verge article completely just brushes aside the entire point of the video. I was like, it was wrong to film her. And then, like, so what happened here is someone else, I don't know the guy's name, but he usually writes this article, The Interface, Casey Newton. But he let Russell Brandom take over the column this week. And Russell Brandom spends just a few minutes talking about how awful Project Veritas is. But then he goes into all of these other topics, right? Like elsewhere. Yeah, and it's just like a bunch of, it's like, hey, ignore that. Let's talk about all these other things that are coming out of YouTube. Oh, look at all the good stuff. Oh, Instagram. This is all wonderful. But he ignores the meat of the story,
yeah,
which is the YouTube AI is actually doing all these things, according to this woman.
And there's no coverage of this anywhere else.
No one is talking about this. It got taken down from YouTube, and everybody's like, conspiracy theorists, which, okay, but the other great thing about this is the woman on the video had a response to this, and they waited a day later, and then he released the documentation that someone had leaked, which further contradicted what she had to say about that. So
yeah.
I would highly recommend, you can't watch it on YouTube, but it's still on Vimeo and BitChute and whatever. Project Veritas is the name of the thing. And sure, keep an open mind. Maybe don't believe everything you see, but check it out, because someone, a lot of someones, don't want you to see it. In a big way. And now let's talk about security.
Oh, there's so much security.
Let's talk about Mac malware.
This new Mac malware abuses a recently disclosed Gatekeeper zero-day vulnerability. This is a thing that has not been fixed in macOS. This is the thing that figures out if you should be able to run files that you downloaded or not, but it doesn't check to see if you should be able to run files from a network share. And it turns out the network shares over the internet work just fine. So if somebody puts a binary that's very malicious on an internet-accessible file share and then sends you a link to that, your Mac will perfectly happily open that and run it.
We talked about this before, but it was just the security researchers. They were like, hey, look what we were able to do. And of course, as soon as they released that, people started doing it. So
I think I naively said, I'm pretty sure Apple will get this patched right away. Yeah. Narrator. They didn't.
So it is officially happening. Bad people are doing it. So watch out for that. Now, here's a situation where I don't think this one's in the wild yet. So, you know, this is a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? When will we see this one?
Microsoft Excel's Power Query feature can be abused for malware distribution. So disabling DDE support in Excel should prevent the attack, Microsoft says. So dynamic data exchange. Basically, Excel Power Query is like a binary add-in for Excel. It goes all the way back to like super old Excel, like Excel 5 or 6.
It's default in the new version.
And so it's just, but it's an external executable. And so it runs outside of the Excel sandbox. And so it can be co-opted into doing bad things.
Yeah, you can pull in data from other sources, which means that someone could craft an Excel file that pulls in data from their malware server.
What could go wrong?
Everything can go wrong. We've talked about pacemakers and there's the classic story about the radiation machines, the old computer science ethics. If you ever take a computer science ethics course, you learn about the radiation machine that had the rollover bug.
You can accidentally dose people with radiation, and so they were like, well, we just won't sell it in America.
It literally, like, you know, it was an energy rollover, and you could go from let's try and kill cancer cells to death laser. And that happened, and one guy programmed the whole thing. So there's a rich history of medical malfunctions due to technology. Here, there, we have another chapter.
The FDA has warned about an insulin pump cybersecurity incident. Now, this is kind of similar. Remember how a few weeks ago, well, it's been a few months ago now, I think, we reported on insulin pumps that were sought after because they had a security vulnerability, because people could monitor their sugar levels and completely automatically close the loop and have their pump work automatically based on sensors. So, like, while they slept, it could, you know, do the thing, and, you know, potentially bad software could kill you, but basically it's probably fine. And so the FDA is now warning that, hey, some of these insulin pumps are so insecure that if somebody is walking around you maliciously with a phone, they can overdose you with insulin. So be careful.
What a weird way to go. How do you think insurance pays out on that?
No.
You're going to be wrapped up in an insurance investigation or your loved ones will. You'll be dead. But for the rest of their lives, they're going to be trying to get that life insurance claim because that is not something they're going to believe. We have talked in the past about when it comes to ad blocking and stuff like that, one of the best ways to do it is not to try and stop them, but to try and just feed them garbage. And this is not the first time this has been done. There have been other kinds of plugins and stuff which try to just you know, randomly fill your tracking history with trash. And basically, they can't track you because it's just random garbage. But this one brings kind of a fun new twist to it by giving it character classes.
Firefox will give you a fake browsing history to fool advertisers. You can be a filthy rich person, a prepper, an influencer, or a hype beast. So Firefox is coming out with a new version that it seems really awesome, and it's got a lot of do not track and anti-track features in them, and this will actually pollute the trackers and advertisers with lots and lots of fake data. Because you're going to real websites, and it seems like real browsing, but it's not.
Now, it does mention that it opens up 100 tabs at a time, and we can tell you from experience, if you're not using an ad blocker, now if you are using an ad blocker, this is kind of pointless.
Yeah.
Because you're going to go to these sites and your ad blocker is going to stop this from reporting. So you're not going to get any of the effects. You're just wasting your time. But if you open 100 tabs without an ad blocker, I don't see how it's not going to crash the browser.
It would have to open it in a new process that's just running somewhere else. And it's like, it doesn't matter if the user experience there is terrible. Maybe the resources they save by not actually rendering images or anything is good.
I don't know. Those tracking scripts, though, it seems like those are still... Maybe it like closes them as soon as it finishes loading the page. I don't know. But it is an interesting way of... The guy that tested it, he said that, you know, he went with the influencer one, and immediately everything he saw online was makeup and yoga pants and tropical vacations, and it was like, wow, that's really effective, because it overrode what he was already getting with his real profile almost immediately. So pretty cool. The cloud has many uses, but perhaps one of the uses that you didn't think about was China using the cloud and using it to leap down from and attack our infrastructure.
Inside the West's failed fight against China's cloud hopper attacks. So if you run your stuff on the internet, it's like, hey, we're getting a lot of traffic from China. We should probably just block all the traffic from China. Okay, sounds good. But like the U.S., remember the U.S., the stories about the U.S. where it's like, we're going to invade Russia's power grid and then use that. It's like, we're in here. You can't get rid of us. You know, don't do anything bad or we'll shut the power grid down. China is spending time inside of American companies, and so they can launch attacks from inside of compromised infrastructure, actually inside America.
There were big names, HP Enterprise.
Well, they were very careful to, like, apparently there's a federal investigation going on, and they didn't want to name companies, but the journalist here figured out it was HP Enterprise and one other.
Well, no, here's there. Fujitsu, Tata Consultancy Services, NTT, Dimension Data. Yada, yada, yada. HPE. These are the guys they suspect, APT-10, are behind the attacks.
We've talked about them before.
And yeah, they used the cloud as ways to... they were targeting...
IBM was another big one that they were targeting.
They were targeting people within... They've got this nice little graphic here, but they were using the cloud. Here's the cloud. And they were targeting specific people inside these organizations to try to get information on. Biggest thing about it is it went on for years and nobody knew. So, impressive. Dangerous, but impressive. Amazon drone delivery is perhaps a dream, a dystopian dream, but still a dream. I mean, the idea that you can just get your package almost immediately, you don't have to interact with a human. A lot of people have been dreaming about that. But aside from the obvious hurdles and issues that have come with drone delivery, you know, the job destruction and the dead pets, there are some things that you might not have thought about, but you can bet your ass that Amazon thought about them because they patented them.
Amazon has patented its surveillance as a service tech for its delivery drones, including technology that cuts out footage of your neighbor's house.
So, as usual, they have some nice images from the patent here. So there's an exclusion zone, and apparently what they have in mind here is like, okay, there are drones in your area, right? They're going to be delivering to your neighbors and all that stuff. For a fee, we can just watch what's going on at your house. And if we see anything weird, we'll let you know.
I see that you've built a deck. The PVA has been notified.
They mentioned things like cars parked there that shouldn't be. People, if it sees people in your yard that shouldn't be there, open garage doors during times when it shouldn't be like that. Just give you a quick note. Hey, heads up.
This sounds great. I can use the Amazon drones to keep an eye on the vacation house in Mar-a-Lago where I'm only at 2 weeks out of the year.
Mar-a-Lago. That's not what that is.
I know that's not what that is.
It's a building.
Yeah.
So they talk about you could do weekly visits, daily visits. How about hourly visits?
Can you imagine
once an hour a drone is just cruising by?
Well, you know, a lot of the Supreme Court rulings have been super disappointing with like the whole, you know, car surveillance automation and things like that. What's to stop a private investigation service from just launching a fleet of drones? Like for a fee, you could just have somebody surveilled 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by robots and drones.
Well, with the Amazon one, they're careful to say that it's going to be you.
Well, yeah,
so you can't do that to somebody else.
So what you're telling me is I could go copy-paste Amazon's patent and be like, it does this, but it's for hire. And it doesn't just do you, it does anybody.
Well, I suppose, I mean, when you are in public, you have no right to privacy. So if the drone recognized your vehicle through image recognition and just follows you, that'd be legal, right?
Well, and that one ruling was like, if your car is parked in your driveway, but your car can be observed from a public area, then that doesn't count. And it's like, Supreme Court justices, do you really want to open that can of worms?
Yeah, but isn't like so far above your house, because you don't have any control over the air traffic.
Right.
So at some point, at some so many feet, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So it could just hover there. And the cameras are good enough. Just zoom right in.
Or just like land on a tree or a telephone pole or something or a street light and just wait there. And it's like, you know, it's got the Pentagon's laser thing and it's just like, oh no, he's in there.
Dark times. But think of all the package deliveries.
I can get same day delivery from Amazon. It's all worth it.
Speaking of surveillance, how about when you install the surveillance on your own, right? They don't have to send the drone because you, like the sheep that you are, have outfitted your entire house with cameras and given them access to it.
Google admits that it's got a bug that could let people spy on Nest cameras. So if you buy a used Nest camera, even if you've wiped it, when you re-enroll it online, it lets people that used to own it access a feed of images from it because of a bug in the cloud
service.
It's
Wink. So if you use Wink, I don't know exactly what Wink is, but Wink never forgets your Nest camera, even through a factory reset.
It's like, isn't there supposed to be like a password that you set for access to this device?
That's too complicated.
Something.
These people don't know passwords. So if you buy a third party, if somebody has an Nest camera and they're like, don't buy Nest cameras on Craigslist, because you know right now, somebody out there has figured this out and is just reselling the shit out of Nest cameras for less money and archiving all. It can take a picture every minute. Pretty disturbing. Think about what you've done in front of your Nest camera. And think about somebody looking at that every minute.
This article does point out that if you have this kind of thing in like an Airbnb, you're still not allowed to have any kind of cameras at all, period. In like private areas, which it considers like bedrooms, bathrooms, and some other areas.
You're skipping ahead.
What? That was in that article. That mentions that.
This article mentions that.
Oh, the previous article mentions that. This is the lead-in. That was the lead-in to this article.
Okay.
So, you know, you can look for cameras. Like the Nest camera is kind of obvious, but how to use this $70 gadget to detect spy cameras in your Airbnb or hotel room. So, you're not supposed to have cameras in those private areas, but sometimes people hide them in things like smoke detectors. This thing will help you find it.
This is just an RF detector. Pretty simple.
It finds electronics, basically.
So you can pick one of these up. They mention the brand and everything if you want to look into this. They got theirs, I think, on eBay for $70. Now, there are cameras out there that are designed to hide these signals. And you will not beat that. So if we're talking about high-level government surveillance, no.
Or somebody that had the foresight to wrap their smoke detector surveillance camera in aluminum foil, it won't detect that either.
And they're not broadcasting. It's just literally just capturing. Yeah. So, but your average Airbnb creep, probably not that advanced. So if you spend a lot of time in these places, might not be a bad investment.
Yeah, it's at $70. I mean, that's pretty good. Mm.
And, you know, it's probably fun. You can pretend to be a spy, uncovering all the cameras.
I wonder if you get a refund. It's like, that's like Airbnb bingo. It's like, oh, looks like our stay is free.
They mentioned that you can get a refund, but people had been charged cancellation fees because they found a camera and left, which is dark.
That's terrible.
Yeah. This week in Florida, we talked about, was it Baltimore? And then there was another city that got hit hard.
There were several cities that have been hit hard by crypto, but there have been two cities in Florida in a 2 week span that have been also hit hard.
Yeah, I was trying to think of the other places, though. Anyway, Baltimore, I think, was the biggest one because they refused to pay. But in Florida, they had some huge ransomwares. So one happened, and they're like, oh, we got to pay it. And you have to know, like, how many local Florida news stations do you think carry that story? Every single one, right?
Yeah.
And yet,
a second Florida city has paid a giant ransom to a ransomware gang in a week. $500,000 in Lake City. If you live in or around Lake City, I'm sorry, your taxes are going up.
And that is, for this. That is not a big city.
No.
I think they said 65,000 people. So, pretty sad.
What did they have that they couldn't just, like, just format and reload?
Well, it shut everything down. You know, they were burning money just through the, I mean, cities bring in a ton of money.
Yeah.
All those traffic tickets. So, yeah, and I just, I mean, imagine being that person, because they have to know who it was, right?
Yeah.
You watched another city basically burn to the ground because of ransomware, and you got an email and was like, oh,
I should open this.
I do want more information about penis enlargement. Click. You got to hope they lost their job, but with bureaucracy, maybe they just have to go through some training. I don't know.
That's terrible.
Don't be that person. Don't trust those email links.
Well, not only that, but the city should architect their IT infrastructure a little better so that everything is not connected to everything else. I mean, that's the whole point, right?
I'm sure they will do that as soon as this is over and not just go back to business as usual, because now they don't even have the money to fix what was wrong before.
Yeah, I've got some bad news for them. Like, once they decrypt, there's going to be a lot of little surprises that come out of the woodwork, you know, a week or 2 months or 3 months down the road. So I wouldn't be surprised if we hear about Lake City again in the future.
Also during the busy season, because
this is busy season.
Well, Lake City's probably the northern part. It's probably not a beach city, right?
I guess, is winter in Florida the busy season or summer? I don't know. That's a good question.
What kind of question is that? It's a beach.
Well, winter in Florida is still summer-like and for everywhere else. It's
yeah, but
not as hot.
But you've also got Disney. Summer is definitely the time to go. Spring is probably huge. Spring break. Either way, I'm sure Lake City has some tourism. And if everything is shut down in the city from ransomware, that probably hurts that.
We literally can't do anything.
All right, that's all we got for that one. Friday, for those of you who are, you know, you get up from that meat hangover after the barbecue on the 4th, you're burned from the sparklers and the rocket's red glare, and you want to watch some news, we're going to have social media and nonsense.
Nice.